Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Hemp Day Hump Day Update. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today, we've got the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, hemp expert extraordinaire and goat rancher beyond all compare. It's Doug Fine joining us. Hi, Doug. How you doing?
Thank you, Russ. Oh, my gosh. It's great to be here. And your introductions are the best in the business.
Well, thank you. And you are back at the ranch, I understand, in New Mexico?
Deep breath, yeah, for a few bit of decompression between harvest and processing on a couple of hemp projects, yes.
I know. We just got through Croptober here in Oregon. I know all throughout the country, cannabis plants, both marijuana and hemp varieties have been harvested. And I know you've been hard at work at that up here in the Pacific Northwest, if I'm not mistaken, with some of the tribes up here.
That's right. I'm proud to say that I have been the lead and continue to be the lead consultant for the Colville tribes of Eastern Washington outside of Spokane. And the tribal council just decided they believed in hemp and wanted to see. There's a long history actually in the region of hemp as there is in so many parts of the world. And folks remember it. And when the tribal council gets behind a project, it's going to happen. And so we just, after a fairly dramatic year, due to somewhat restrictive regulations in Washington, the tribe, we just got 60 acres harvested, and we're putting together, it's fun, we're putting together the packaging and labeling for a tribally branded edible hemp seed product.
And how is that working with, between the tribe and the states? I know the tribes have their own sovereignty. Is there any hang up between the Washington state regulations and what the tribes are allowed to do?
It's a fascinating area, and I continue to learn so much about it. I'm looking right now here at the cover of a book I just ordered called Documents of United States Indian Policy, because it's a must read for anybody who's doing the kind of work that I'm now doing. And but the long story short is that tribes have many different options. There's all different kinds of relationships that tribes have with states, with U.S. states and with the federal government. And different tribes have different kinds of relationships and treaties with the federal government. And so tribes are smart and they have good attorneys often, and they'll figure out the best way to work. In the case of Colville, for quite a number of reasons, what the tribe decided to do, and I think very wisely this year, was comply with their state's federally compliant program. And it's in doing so, you're agreeing to a kind of insanity, which is basically saying we're agreeing to SERF-like conditions. And this has to do with poor first-year policy in the Washington State Hemp Program. Hopefully will be improved. It's really nobody's fault. Everybody did their best. But very few participants participated at all. It's way easier to grow psychoactive cannabis than hemp. The farmers are treated like serfs. They can't replant seed, which is fine if you want to obtain, copyrighted trademark seed. But there's plenty of other options in the U.S. which were not allowed for any participants in the state of Washington this year. It was not one of the best programs in the nation this year, and yet the tribe forged through and became one of just a few, I mean really two or three entities that harvested hemp legally in the state of Washington this year. And I'm really, really proud of it, because as the inevitable end game, Russ, which you and I have been now talking about here on Hemp Day Hump Day for years, as the inevitable end game comes of cannabis is just another plant, if the final product has some sort of potential psychoactivity, of course it would be regulated by a locality in some way for adult use or medicinal use. But if it doesn't have psychoactivity, it's no more the government's business how or what it's grown for or what types of varieties are grown for than it would be for tomatoes, grapes, or wheat or anything else. So I'm proud of the tribe for fighting through under extremely restrictive conditions, and it only just helps them be in a good position for continuing to heal soil and generate revenue into the future.
And as far as the purpose of the crops, you mentioned it doesn't matter as long as it's not psychoactive, but some people are now looking to hemp crops as a source of cannabidiol or CBD, which does have medical benefits for people. Is that an area the tribe is looking at, or are we talking more traditional seed, fiber, oil type production?
Russ, I hope you're sitting down and all the listeners are sitting down, because incredibly, the state of Washington, whose blessed voters legalized ganja in, the first wave, In the state of Washington this year, it was not permitted for hemp fibers, for hemp farmers to grow for flowers. You know, down the street, you want to grow ganja for flower, go for it. But for hemp, only seed applications were allowed. And it's an insane and unacceptable policy, but the tribe decided to comply with it, and we're making the best of it. We're putting together these really tasty roasted hemp seeds that I think folks are going to love.
Is the regulation set up in such a way where hemp is defined strictly as a less than 0.3% cultivar? In such a way, what I'm getting at, Doug, is if you wanted to grow a bunch of hemp, could you just get a recreational marijuana license and then decide to grow some really low THC cannabis? Would it work that way, or is all less than 0.3 automatically hemp?
If you want to be part of the state's hemp program, you have to subscribe to their rules, which in addition to the, when I say insane, it's humanity doesn't have time for bullshit regulations. Excuse my French. And so, as you can tell, I'm not thrilled about it. And, let alone, you know, economically struggling indigenous people in our North America, in our own continent, who want to generate revenue for their people, for their tribe. But as credible as it might sound, if you wanted to cultivate this year in Washington, you could only cultivate through European Union certified cultivars obtained from Canada or Europe. No domestic cultivars, despite this being not to mention more patriotic and the state's ag department existing to support farmers, but also contrary to federal law, which allows domestic cultivars. So this year, if you wanted to comply with the state program, you had to be under the, you know, we've gone touched on probably the two most serious, these unbelievably restrictive conditions, no growing for flower cultivars, or flower applications, and no acquiring of your own genetics that met the federal definitions of hemp. But to answer your question of could someone who wants to produce, for instance, cannabinoid product from other cannabinoids besides THC, do it under a rec permit and market it that way? Probably. And I'll tell you this, in another state in which I'm involved right now, in Hawaii, that is a mode that early farmers in their early jostling before a real policy and a real program is set up in Hawaii, that's what some farmers are doing. They're using their whatever it is, 6 or 7 medicinal allowed plants to start developing hemp cultivars so that they're prepared with domestic cultivars that they, you know, can replant and once the program proper starts up.
Wow, we are truly through the looking glass when we've got these states with medical cannabis and recreational cannabis laws that are allowing people to grow, harvest, process, and sell, possess, and use all this cannabis with all the THC in it that we could possibly want. But now that we're talking about hemp, it seems to be more restricted in some of these states. I mean, that's got to make you pull your hair out.
It's very frustrating, and you know, it's legitimate, I think, you know, to have a discussion about it. You know, I think, Russ, we probably joked about this before in Hemte Hemte, of how I jokingly like to always think of I occupy the reasonable middle ground here, right? Like, I can see the other fellow's point of view. And, you know, let's say you are somebody who worked hard in Finland, Canada, Europe, somewhere, Australia, to develop certain genetics that provide certain qualities, and you want to have certain rules applied if somebody buys your product. I think that's fine. I think that it's equivalent to Levi's jeans. If you buy a pair of Levi's jeans, you cannot buy those jeans, as far as I know, take them home, take the patch off that says Levi's, put your name on it, say these are my jeans, and resell them as your product. I get that. However, if you want to buy raw cotton denim material and craft jeans from your own source, as long as they meet definitions of what denim are and you can call it denim, you're allowed to create your own genes. And that's what farmers should be allowed to do with genes spelled differently, G-E-N-E-S. Kicking and screaming are the Monsanto mentalities of the world, understanding that farmers are free entrepreneurs who don't have to buy their products and don't have to follow their rules. And breeders are going to the level some of actually manipulating state hemp programs and to only allow, and this is supporting foreign companies, to only allow their genetics. I have no problem with people who want to feel like they are getting the sort of comfort of knowing they're going to get this particular really good, let's say, fiber crop that they want to import with the permission of the breeder and not replant it, or develop a relationship with the breeder where they are allowed after, because the breeder, to their, under their rights, which I agree with, should have a series of rules that have to be followed in order for someone to sort of climb that level through foundation seed and up to the different levels of seed. That's fine. However, there's tons of hemp genetics in the U.S. right now that meet federal definitions of hemp that, for instance, just to name one, my Vermont group will provide with a right of replication, no restrictions. It's yours. As long as you can crossbreed it, you can read. That's what free farming is. We're not serfs here anymore. And so we're not, free farmers are not going to play that game and we're going to keep fighting until we win. And again, it's not saying that you should not reward people who have created a great product and want certain right restrictions. It just doesn't say everybody has to buy those. That's all we're saying.
There you go. Just like you wouldn't force everyone to have to buy Levi's jeans. They should have the choice to buy whichever jeans are made by whoever makes the best jeans. That sounds like what we apply to just about everything else in capitalism. Why not farming? I'm so glad that you're on this issue and working with these farmers, both the Native American farmers and our state hemp farmers. We've talked to you about numerous states, Hawaii, Vermont. I know you've been active in Kentucky, Colorado, Oregon. Any other updates you have for us as far as their hemp harvests?
Well, just today got off a call with some folks that are involved in the development process in California. And California is so impactful because of its large population and also with its, it's often bravery in terms of forging progressive policy first that everybody, likes to roll their eyes and say crazy Californians, and then they lead the way and people wind up following. And then there's tons of areas from education, all kinds of policy where California has been groundbreaking and the rest of the world follows. And so it's very important how California unfolds its regulations. And now, having been involved in so many other states and seen, excuse the judgmental sounding of this, but seeing right and wrong ways, not that there's one right way, but farmer supporting, entrepreneurial supporting, American farming supporting policies, and those less so, where I feel as though I have a handle on a few basic things that can be helpful to all farmers. And so in states like California and others that are coming online, Wisconsin's just about to pass their hemp bill, and it's looking like a pretty good one, it's vitally important, these issues. Domestic cultivars be allowed, cultivation for all types of all parts of the plant be allowed, farmers be allowed to apply and grow as much as they want, acquire their own genetics if they like, as long as they meet federal hemp definitions, et cetera, et cetera. All these things legal under federal law, and it's just up to the states to decide. One other state, whether or not they're going to put, the devil's in the details, it's how the state ag departments do their regs, and it's really all about if a governor or a ag department head loves the plan and sees the importance of it to the state's farmers. I want to tell you about one other fun state, Russell, if we have a minute, which is my own state of New Mexico, has a really fun update for you. But briefly, other than making sure that the genetics and the are a free level playing field for farmers to apply, and other than making sure they can grow for all types of the plant, the other sort of player in this is, other than, genetic, foreign genetic companies that are trying to, keep a hold on the market for their own profit. The other issue is the developing love affair amongst all the different types of the cannabis plant. Part in some of the states where there are restrictions, it has to do with perceived, as you and I, we've done whole hump day episodes just on this topic, but perceived friction amongst different parts of the plant, namely people that are cultivating cannabis for above certain thresholds of THC versus those below. And so a large part of, I think, our mission as people that care about the cannabis plant is making sure that the policy, that the mindset within the movement and within the industry is one of understanding cooperation, that there's going to be a broad range of applications from 0.000001 THC through, whatever 80s or 90s for intense cancer treatment or whatever applications may happen for those. And so all of those are just the cannabis plant. And there should be no differentiation, different hemp programs versus this program versus that. It should just be like tomatoes. Grow a tomato. It might be sun-dried. It might be a meat tomato, a soup tomato. It might be a cherry tomato. But who cares what your neighbor's growing? Grow for the application that you want to grow for. And I think we're moving that way in cannabis. Do I have time to tell you a quick anecdote about what's happening here in New Mexico?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Here in New Mexico, last legislative session, our governor, for a short time longer, vetoed 12 bills, and two of them were hemp bills. Our legislature, bipartisan legislature, passed two hemp bills, both of which our governor vetoed. And so it turns out that she didn't follow procedure for how to veto, which is terrific for people that wanted those 12 bills to be passed. It's somewhat dysfunctional when there's that many vetoes in a state anyway. A judge and an appeals judge have now said, it was invalid. And it has to do with, legal experts could explain this better, but you're supposed to explain why you're vetoing it. And she didn't. She just vetoed them. And our hemp bills are law. And the slightly better one, neither one of them are extremely robust. I and many others have been working, since I live in New Mexico for years on getting, but the broader one that's going to allow at least some private farmers to get on hand and all that, it looks like it's going to become law. And it's a beautiful thing. It's like the universe is not allowing an unreasonable veto of this important crop. So the wheels are starting to turn in New Mexico at this point between continuing legal challenges of the overall veto issue and the fact that the poor Department of Ag is a bit hamstrung. I know all these guys. I've been talking to them for years. They kind of get it about hemp, but their boss doesn't even want the bill to have been passed. And so it's like a little tricky to get the regulations going, but it's yet another victory. It looks like my home state here, the land of enchantment in New Mexico, is coming online with hemp at last.
Oh, that's really good news. One last issue I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if you've been following this one, but in the state of Missouri, there is a man who is taking a case to the Supreme Court there for his right to farm cannabis, psychoactive cannabis, because Missouri has in its constitution a right to farm amendment. Now, the opposition is saying, it's illegal cannabis. It's illegal cannabis. It's not really farming. This has no merit. And he has lost at the previous levels of his court challenges. But I was curious as to this right to farm amendment and knowing, where Missouri might be on hemp. Could that be used for a hemp farmer in Missouri to say he's got a right to farm hemp?
That's a great question. I didn't know about that example. And kind of a side note that's interesting about right to farm laws, not all, but in some cases, right to farm laws started to come about from big monoculture ag and chemical companies that were worried about the prospect of states banning their crops for safety reasons. And so some of the right to farm laws actually came about from big ag. So the issue with hemp at this moment, and I'm glad you brought this up because really it's a nice punctuation point, which is that I would love the radical Russ to be just regular everyday Russ and Hemp Day Hump Day to, if not be unnecessary, just talk about more in the fastest industry to cross the $1 billion domestic annual revenue mark of any, which hemp is already on the way for. It's doubled in size this year from last year, according to the last week's report from Vote Hemp. It's a gorgeous thing, 1,500 hemp farmers in the U.S. But the issue with hemp in the case of, let's say, applying that Missouri right to grow law is, in order in the current phase of things, if one wants to be in sync with federal and state law, one has to grow under a certain restrictions having to do with limited farm bill provision, namely cultivating under your state's hemp program. And so, in other words, this Missouri farmer could potentially get away with it within the state. But last year, or now getting almost 2 years ago, the Menominee Nation in Wisconsin, they were raided with their crop seized, their hemp crop seized, because Missouri itself did not have a state hemp program. Wisconsin itself did not have a state hemp program. So I hope I was making myself clear that you're actually not federally illegal right now unless you are participating in a state hemp program.
Got it. All right. Well, Doug Fine, thanks so much for joining us here for Hemp Day Hump Day Update. It's always a wealth of information you bring to the table, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Russ. Keep up the great work.